We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
There's a bony finger towards me and croaks, "You want a Halloween jumbo box?" I whisper it terrified, "No." And as I leave, he asks the lady behind me. She says, "Okay." And then
she wants $75,000.
Scare up some cash with the Halloween Jumbo Bucks Instant Game. Only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing, head-raising fun. Please play responsibly.
Love getting prices that are lower than low on food that's fresher than fresh? Then shop at Kroger. We give you more ways to save on the fresh you love with tools like the Kroger app, where you can find personalized coupons on top of weekly sales, giving you prices that are lower than the everyday low. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Protect your loved ones from the flu this season by making a flu shot appointment for yourself and the people you care about most at Kroger.com/flu. Your people are our people.
Morning.
How'd you get in my house, B?
Through the air conditioning vent. It's dark in there.
Go away.
How about some Honey Nut Cheerios?
Cheerios. Do I look like a child to you?
Honey Nut Cheerios are tasty and can help lower cholesterol as part of a heart-healthy diet. Did you just
No.
I'm pretty sure I heard a
It was my dryer.
You might want to get that thing checked out.
Have a change of heart. Honey Nut Cheerios. Learn more about Honey Nut Cheerios by picking up a box at your local store.
Sports and scandals, what more could you ask for? I'm Rachel Bonetta.
And I'm Rechna Fruchtbaum.
And every week on our new podcast, Hall of Shame, we'll take each other through some of the biggest scandals in sports history.
From Maria Sharapova's doping scandal to Dennis Rodman's friendship with Kim Jong-un, we'll talk about what happened, why these stories matter, and how they're still relevant today.
New episodes of Hall of Shame come out every Monday. Find it on radio.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your shows.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
Parrish speaking to you from Memphis, Tennessee. Bennett Doyle's producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day as best you can.
Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings.
And I hope to God you aren't still going through life with no respect for our king, LeBron James, because if so, the greatest basketball player this planet has ever known. He had some words for you last night after he won another world championship. He said he wants his damn respect. So it's past time for you to respect your king. Bennett, do you respect your king?
I do, yes.
Okay. Just checking. We're going to get into it momentarily.
Some issues over here.
The only issue right now is, do you respect your king?
I do.
Okay. You can figure everything else out, but that's where we start. That's our foundation.
Microphone's breaking on me.
Our foundation is whether or not you respect your king.
Yes, respect. Respect.
We're going to get into that momentarily, and I'll explain to you, this is interesting to me, why the most common counter-argument to LeBron being the GOAT is also the dumbest counter-argument. That's not usually how these things work. Usually when somebody makes a counter-argument, you have to go, ooh, that's a good one, and then you have to try to come up with a counter-argument. But the LeBron's not the GOAT counter-argument, the one that is most commonly referenced, doesn't actually work in favor of Michael Jordan. I'll explain. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon schedule for you. 425, Adam Rittenberg is going to join me. He covers college football for ESPN, so I'm really looking forward to talking to him because it was a wild weekend in college football. Alabama, Ole Miss was loads of fun. Tennessee looked good against Georgia for a half. Mike Leach's offense didn't score a single point against Kentucky, so that's rough for Mississippi State. LSU got handled again. They stink. Texas-Oklahoma was ridiculous. We got a young woman flipping a bird, national television. Fun weekend of college football. I'll talk to Adam Rittenberg about it. Do it around 425. When I finish that, I'll take a break, come back, do four notable stories at 444, at which point I will discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, the ALCS got started last night. Nice win for the Rays in game one against the Astros. They are up early in game two this afternoon. Meantime, NLCS, Dodgers Braves, game one tonight. We'll talk baseball for a bit around 444. Dak Prescott, bad injury yesterday. Season is almost certainly over. They're not calling it a season-ending injury, but it sure as hell looked like it looked like a season. It looked like
yes.
My man's foot was just hanging there. We'll get into that a little later on this hour. The COVID Titans had another positive test this weekend, but they will play, it appears, tomorrow night on CBS. It's America's most watched network. We'll get into that just before 5 o'clock. And Rafael Nadal won another Grand Slam yesterday. It was called the French Open, so there's another possible GOAT living in the world right now. We'll talk about that during four notable stories, 444. 5 o'clock, Jeff Cock is just like always. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get on out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to. But I wanted to start with the NBA Finals, which concluded last night, courtesy of a blowout orchestrated by our king, LeBron James. Friday night's Game 5 was an all-timer with LeBron and Jimmy Butler just throwing haymakers at each other, back and forth, back and forth. It was compelling from start to finish. But last night's Game 6 was something very different. It was 64-36 at the half. Mm-hmm. The Lakers were up 28 points after 24 minutes, and the Heat never made a serious run to get back in it. So final score, Lakers 106, Heat 93. Our king LeBron James finished with 28 points, 14 rebounds, 10 assists. That's a triple-double. He now has four NBA titles with three different franchises. He was unanimously selected as MVP of these finals, so he's now been a finals MVP four times for three different franchises, the Heat, the Cavs, and the Lakers. He is the first player in the history of the NBA to ever do such a thing. Obviously, afterward, he was asked for his thoughts while on the court down at Disney World inside the bubble. He started by thanking Jeannie Buss, the controlling owner and president of the LA Lakers. Then he started talking about respect, and this is what that sounded like.
Jeannie, I told Jeannie when I came here that I was going to put this franchise back in a position where it belongs. Her late great father did it for so many years, and she just, you know, took it on after that. And for me to be a part of such a historical franchise is it's an unbelievable feeling, not only for myself, but for my teammates, for the organization, for the coaches, for the trainers, everybody that's here. We just want our respect. Rob wants his respect. Coach Vogel wants his respect. Our organization wants their respect. Laker Nation wants their respect. And I want my damn respect, too.
He wants his damn respect, too, Bennett. Do you respect your king?
Yeah, and I kind of actually respect the quote. I know he's taking some flack for it, but I thought it was appropriate in the moment.
Well, can you imagine, in all seriousness for a second, then we'll get back to goofing around, how frustrating it must be to be as awesome as he is at what he does, even at the age of 35. We can get it twisted up in the regular season. We do, often. The best basketball player in the world on October 12th, 2020 is still that guy. If you got a high-stakes game, you got to win it tonight, that's still your guy. It's not Giannis. Agreed. It's not Kawhi. It's not Steph. It's not KD. It's not Kyrie. It's that guy. Age 35, he is still the best basketball player in the world when the chips are down. So can you imagine being that awesome at anything? First, just stop there. Can you imagine being that awesome at anything? I can't.
No.
It's ridiculous.
No.
But imagine being that awesome at anything and people still try to nitpick you.
Right.
I mean, it would drive you crazy.
It would drive me insane.
It would drive you crazy. So when he says, I want my damn respect too, it's like, why I got to wake up tomorrow morning and have Skip Bayless say some nonsense on television when I have just dragged another franchise to a world championship? Like, Cleveland is missing the playoffs every year. I go back to Cleveland. Within 2 years, I'm winning the championship. The Lakers are missing the playoffs. I go to L.A. Within 2 years, I got a championship. Nobody else on the planet can do that. Nobody on the planet has ever done that.
Nope.
So, of course, he wants his damn respect. You respect your king, Bennett?
Yes.
So I tweeted respect your king last night just because I think it's funny mm-hmm. how mad people get.
Oh, dude. The thing is you could talk about how, you mentioned Skip Bayless, the joke is, they'll do the LeBron Jordan thing all the time and everything. Like, bro, LeBron James, when you bring this stuff, I know you're about to talk about it, but, it gets people fired up.
It's so funny to me how mad people get when I do it. There were so many nerds who were so bothered.
I knew as soon as you tweeted
so bothered by LeBron. When you demand that they respect him as their king.
Yes.
It makes me laugh every time. I get so many replies every time. Last night, the replies are like, he's not a king.
Yeah.
Or he's not my king, or my favorite. My king was a carpenter.
That was what?
Meaning my king is Jesus Christ.
Oh, very well put.
Let me be clear about something.
Nice.
If you see me or anybody else tweet about LeBron James as the king, and you're compelled to reply by insisting that Jesus is your king? I cannot overstate how funny I think you are. I mean, even Kanye West doesn't do that, and he's got an album called Jesus is King.
That's true.
And even he doesn't get offended by LeBron is king. You know, I used to call LeBron our king and savior because I just thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. And even though I was clearly goofing around when I would do that, I don't actually think LeBron is our savior. Some folks seemed to be genuinely offended by the savior part. I would get Facebook messages about it or, replies on Twitter. Now, did I understand it? No. I mean, I was clearly just being silly and goofing around. Do you really think I think LeBron James is our savior?
Well,
I mean, he does save basketball franchises.
Yeah.
And while we're on the subject, children in Akron, by providing them with hope and
point.
A free education. So on some level, I guess he is a savior. Mm-hmm. But whatever. Not here to argue that.
Okay.
Every time I would say it, somebody was very anxious to tell me how offended they were by me calling LeBron our savior. So then I start weighing the pros and cons of that. And though, again, I think it's funny, I decided it wasn't funny enough to me to keep doing it if it genuinely offended people and was interpreted by some as me being disrespectful of somebody's religion. Because, and I'm being sincere here, I'd never want to be disrespectful of anybody's religion. And I wouldn't want people thinking of me that way. I stopped writing that Politex column for CBS Sports where the AP poll would come out every Monday. And I would find some voter, usually somebody out of the same group of 15 people every week for years now, who just did something that was nonsensical. And then I would write about how it's nonsensical. And I would explain it in great detail. And it was a good column. People liked it. It was read a lot. And it was, with rare exception, on the mark every time. There was no way for anybody to argue against it. More often than not, in fact, almost without exception, if the person I wrote about actually responded or acknowledged it publicly, you know what they'd say? Mm. You're right. You got me. I messed up. Every time. Almost every time. So it was a good column rooted in things that you can't argue against, but it created a perception. I saw this in a few different places. Gary Parrish is treating these beat writers from various parts of the country, typically small-time newspaper people, like crap. He's crapping on them and humiliating them he's a bad guy. And frankly, I got uncomfortable with that. Because the truth is, I don't think you could find anybody in my profession who would tell you I treat them poorly or that I haven't treated them well. Like, I'm not saying I'm perfect. There are certainly people I don't treat well, or at least people I don't treat as well as maybe I should, but that's just from a lack of caring more than, like, I treat you badly. I don't treat people badly as much as I just don't think about them. So, like, that's a flaw for me, I can acknowledge. But I didn't like the idea that people thought I was treating those people poorly as opposed to just writing a column that pointed out a mistake that they made. So I was like, you know what? It's not worth it anymore. Like, I don't want people thinking that is what I'm doing because it's not what I'm doing. I'm just highlighting a stupid thing that somebody did in this AP poll. So I stopped doing the column with the blessing of my editors. And it is the same fabric of why I stopped calling LeBron our king and savior, because if it genuinely offended some people and created this idea that I was being disrespectful of somebody's religion, even though I wasn't, I didn't want people thinking that, so I canned it. But if you're still offended by the entire world calling LeBron James the king, which is a nickname he's had for like 20 years, then that's on you as far as I'm concerned. Like, I got to draw the line with you weirdos somewhere. So if I tweet respect your king and you reply with my king was a carpenter, just know that I'm laughing at you. Not with you. I'm laughing at you because only a crazy person could be offended by a basketball player's nickname that he's had since he was a teenager. Anyway, guess what got restarted last night, Bennett? The GOAT conversation going full speed again. And Lakers coach Frank Vogel offered his opinion on it last night in the postgame presser. Here's what Frank Vogel said when he identified LeBron James as the greatest player in the history of the world.
You decided to coach this team and come to the Lakers, even though at the time there was a lot of uncertainty around the franchise.
Well, there's not uncertainty in my mind with LeBron James. And you know, I took the job, but we didn't have Anthony Davis. We didn't have really our whole team. You know, it was a different team after the fact, but I have always believed in LeBron James. You know, he's the greatest player the basketball universe has ever seen. And if you think you know, you don't know. Okay, until you're around him every day, you're coaching him, you're seeing his mind, you're seeing his adjustments, seeing the way he leads the group. If you think you know, you don't know. And it's just been a remarkable experience coaching him and, you know, seeing him take this group that was not in the playoffs last year. The roster was put together, you know, overnight, and just taking a group and leading us to the promised land, so they say. He was terrific just the entire season leading us, and you know, I can't say enough about him.
So even before Frank Vogel called LeBron the GOAT last night, I referred to him on Twitter as the best basketball player to ever live. A, because I believe it to be true, but also B, because it always gets the Michael Jordan stands real, real fired up. And such was the case again last night. Now, I think I'm smart enough to know at this point, if you still reject LeBron James as the GOAT, nothing that happened last night or that I can say right now is going to change your mind. I have all the bullet points. I have all the data. I can make the case, but I've shared all of it with you before. I've done those shows. Did one earlier in these playoffs. So I don't see any reason to do it all again. But I will say, and I noticed this again last night, the weirdest thing about the LeBron-Michael Jordan debate is that the most common retort from the MJ side when you say LeBron James is the GOAT and somebody who disagrees with that wants to make the case for Michael Jordan, the most common reply is also the dumbest. And that's not normal. Like, usually when you are going to argue something and somebody provides the first counter argument to it, usually you got to go, okay, that's That's a good point. But, and then you just, you know, you take it, you try to add on to what you said earlier or make a more compelling case. But with this one, again, it's a dumb counter argument, and yet it is the most common. Like I said, that's not normal. Bennett, what is the most common thing you hear in the form of a LeBron James counter argument when somebody says LeBron is the GOAT and that person who's replying wants to make the case for Michael Jordan?
It's got to be that Jordan always won when he got there.
He's 6-0 in the finals.
Yeah.
6-0 in the finals.
Yeah.
If somebody tweeted it at me one time last night, they tweeted it at me 20 times last night. 6-0 in the finals. Again, usually when there's a counter argument to the point you're making, you have to go, ooh, that's a good point, but what about this? But when your best counter argument to LeBron James being the GOAT is that Michael Jordan was 6-0 in the finals and LeBron now 4-6 in the finals, what you're doing is making the case that you judge success and failure only by what happens after a player gets to the finals. Like, everything else doesn't matter. And that is mind-numbingly dumb. Like, it is cool that Michael Jordan never lost in the finals. But, like, what about all the times he didn't even get to the finals? Michael Jordan played 15 seasons in the NBA. He only made the finals 6 times. So Michael Jordan only advanced to the finals 40% of the time he was in the NBA. LeBron James has played 17 seasons in the NBA. He's been to the finals 10 times. So he's advanced to the finals 59% of the time. Again, Jordan 40% of the time, LeBron 59% of the time. So it is cool that Michael Jordan went 6-0 in the finals, but he didn't get there nearly as often as LeBron got there. He consistently lost early, which should not be considered a good thing. Like, Jimmy Butler is now 0-1 in the finals. Does that mean Jimmy Butler had a worse postseason this season than Donovan Mitchell? Of course not. He got to the finals, and then he lost to a better team with better players. That's LeBron James' story, almost without exception in those 6 finals losses. And yet people routinely try to argue that Michael Jordan losing the Eastern Conference playoffs more often than he didn't is somehow a good thing. Like, MJ losing earlier in the playoffs than LeBron has cannot be considered a good thing for Michael Jordan. It doesn't make any sense. Beyond that, what people, some people can't seem to grasp is that LeBron has only been favored. This one, it's out there. I mean, you could Google it. It pops right out. But people still, for whatever reason, miss it all the time. LeBron James has only been favored in the finals 3 times. He's been there 10 times. He's only been favored to get the championship 3 times. So the fact that he now has 4 titles is actually an example of him overachieving in the finals. People call him a finals failure. He's actually overachieved in the finals. I don't know why that's hard to grasp, but it is for some. And 3 of his finals losses, so half of them, were the ones to the Warriors, a team that had at least 3 and sometimes 4 NBA All-Stars. Jordan never played in the finals against a team with more than 2 All-Stars. Those Warriors teams had 3 and sometimes 4 after Kevin Durant joined. So, yeah, Michael Jordan went 6-0 in the finals. But he was supposed to go 6-0 in the finals. He was favored every time. LeBron's finals record, according to the odds makers, right now, should be 3-7. But it's actually 4-6. So, again, he's actually overachieved in the place where most people think he's floundered too much. As Jeff Calkins might say, it's poppycock. Now, I know if you're in your Bulls jersey, none of this will register with you, or at least it won't change your mind. And that's fine. My only point is that trying to counter-argue LeBron as the GOAT by saying Jordan went 6-0 in the finals is a pretty terrible counter-argument. It sounds good, but it's actually dumb because all it does is remind those of us who respect our king properly how often Michael Jordan just could not get where LeBron James gets basically every year. And I don't know if you saw the posted odds already, but LeBron James will be favored to get there once again next season at the age of 36. It's an amazing thing that we're all witnessing. Respect your king. Respect your king. Adam Rittenberg covers college football for ESPN. He's up next.
All right, listen up. Ed Bugs, yeah. Go up the middle, along the mattress seams. Roaches, yeah. To a zone everywhere there's a crack. Brown recluses, yeah. You're on surprise defense. Anywhere you can hide. Now let's take that house.
Right.
Pests have a game plan. So should you. Get Allied Termite and Pest on your team. They'll talk with you, understand your full situation, and create a custom, safe, and efficient treatment strategy for your home.
We're up against Allied Termite and Pest? I'm throwing in the towel.
Beat the bugs. Visit AlliedPestControl.com today.
Touchdown! Three touchdowns in 2 weekends. Wow. Sheldon Rosengarten with Mark's Bensdorf Realtors doesn't let the fall football season slow him down. People often say, when you want the job done, call Shell Done. Recently, he was about to put a home on the market in Germantown, but sold it the day before. The following weekend, he listed two on Friday, and the one in East Memphis had three offers by Saturday night, and the other one in Cordova had four offers by Sunday evening. Is the real estate market that good? It can be. There's no seasonal slowdown during football season when Sheldon is your quarterback. If you or someone you know is thinking of selling their home, before you draft a quarterback, make sure and have tryouts with 2 to 3 and let Sheldon run his pass pattern for you. You can reach Shell Dunn at 682-1868 or MemphisRelocate.com. Do it now. That's Shell Dunn Rosengarten at 682-1868 or MemphisRelocate.com.
Hey, it's Eric Hasseltine from the Memphis Grizzlies here to tell you about the best place to get a pre-owned vehicle in the entire Mid-South, and that is DeSoto Auto Sales. You can visit them on the web at DeSotoAutoSales.com or simply head on over to 5704 Goodman Road in Olive Branch. Why DeSoto Auto Sales, you say? Well, their prices are fantastic. They've got over 250 cars on the lot, and they range in price from $8,000 to $30,000. Most of these cars are still under their factory warranty, so you're getting a great vehicle. They've been inspected 5 times before they hit the lot. And it's their selection. The lot is always changing. They're trying to get them out of there at the best price possible for their customers so they can clear the lot for more vehicles to come. Trucks, vans, sedans, SUVs, and they can finance you on the spot. They've got financing managers to explain all of your options. It's all there at DeSoto Auto Sales. You can see the entire selection at DeSotoAutoSales.com. Get a great car at a great price. What are you waiting for? Go to DeSotoAutoSales.com or hop on down to 5704 Goodman Road in Olive Branch and visit DeSoto Auto Sales today.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Stretch my hands to you.
Life like, this is what your life like. Try to live the life right. People really know.
Just a horrific injury for Cowboys quarterback, Mississippi State alum Dak Prescott yesterday. Could impact his future with the Dallas franchise. We'll get into that in the next segment. Jeff Cock is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, he covers college football for ESPN. It's Adam Rittenberg. Please make him the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar. Using food and wine to create memorable times.
So, Adam, I don't know that any SEC school should be into moral victories or that we usually enhance our opinion of somebody after a loss. But I think it might have been the case for Ole Miss on Saturday night. Big stage against Nick Saban in Alabama. And, yeah, they lost the game, but it was fun and they kept it interesting. And they've now scored 35 on Florida, 42 on Kentucky, and 48 on Alabama. Even though Lane Kiffin is not going to win the SEC West this season, should Ole Miss fans be encouraged by what they've seen so far?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Lane has done what Lane does, and that's exciting offense and innovative play calling, and he's put Nick Saban on notice a little bit as far as what it's going to be like to face his offense here every year in the SEC West. Now, eventually they're going to have to address their defense, which is horrific, and honestly couldn't have played much worse, even against a very talented Alabama offense on Saturday. But the Kentucky win is encouraging. We'll see how they do this week against Arkansas, which is another team that can feel pretty good about a 1-2 start, which it could easily be 2-1 if the officials maybe had ruled correctly in the Auburn game. And then, you know, you got Auburn, you got A&M. There's some opportunities at LSU towards the end of the season. But, yeah, I think Ole Miss should be excited. You know Lane Kiffin is going to recruit. You know he's going to have exciting offense. The question is whether there'll be enough consistency and whether there'll be a complementary team because, you know, while the game has certainly trended more offense lately, you look at the you look at Clemson, you look at most Alabama teams, you look at you know, Ohio State, some of the top teams in the country, they all have a lot of talent on the defensive side as well.
From Alabama's perspective, what happened on Saturday night? Is it, hey, Ole Miss is going to score on everybody, or is it Alabama might have some issues?
Well, it was probably a combination. You know, Nick Saban talked today about how he felt, you know, Alabama was like a play behind every time and just wasn't able to line up and get into their stuff. Ole Miss, you know, uses tempo really well, and especially with Matt Corral and some of those receivers. And, you know, I also think Alabama does have some issues that when they can't pressure the quarterback, they're a bit vulnerable. And, you know, their back end, we knew, you know, other than Surtain, the one cornerback, was going to be pretty much new guys in the back end. So they were really stressed by that Ole Miss passing attack and the different things that Lane Kiffin does. Now, I don't know if that'll be the case the rest of the season. It'll be interesting to see how they respond this week against a different type of offense in Georgia. But, you know, again, the days of Alabama just shutting everyone down and you're winning every game, you know, 23-7 or over. The good news is they have an offense that's almost impossible to slow down. But I know that Nick Saban certainly a little bit more concerned with what's happening with the defense after Saturday.
Mississippi State opened with a win at LSU. That seemed great at the time. Now, not nearly as much given what we've seen from both Mississippi State and LSU since that day. Since then, Mississippi State has lost to Arkansas and Kentucky. They scored 0 offensive points against Kentucky. Afterward, Mike Leach saying that he might have to purge some malcontents. What do you make of what's happened at Mississippi State under Mike Leach so far? Because I'll be honest, I didn't think Mississippi State was going to win on Saturday. I also didn't think they were going to be sitting on 2 points.
Yeah, it never happened in Mike Leach's career where they didn't manage a single offensive point. You know, on the one hand, Gary, this is what Mike Leach does. It's inconsistent, especially at a new place where, you know, you'll have a seemingly signature win and then you'll have some duds that follow. But I think the level of drop-off is the real concern here. And, you know, I talked to some coaches that studied the LSU game and saw some problems with Mississippi State, even in that game. And so that's something that Mike Leach and his staff, I know they're trying to address their offensive line play, which he certainly wasn't happy about against Kentucky. The quarterback situation is one they're going to have to look at. I mean, KJ Costello, we were all putting him on the Heisman radar after week one, after a record performance. How crazy would it be, Gary, if you go from the best single game performance in SEC history to being benched? And that's a very real possibility because a lot of coaches are saying that he doesn't fit what Mike Leach wants to do. Ultimately, he's not accurate enough. He turns the ball over too much. And so they don't have a lot of great options there in the quarterback room. It'll be interesting to see how they perform this week against an A&M team that seemed to find something last week against Florida. I think it could be an extended period of losses before they get things turned around in Starkville.
Talking to Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. He's on Twitter at ESPN Rittenberg. So Gene Chizik had a career record of 13-24 heading into the 2010 season. He enrolled Cam Newton. They go 14-0, win a national title, and then he was 8-5 in 2011, 3-9 in 2012, at which point he was fired. In other words, he enrolled an all-time great college quarterback and rode him to a title, but everything without Cam Newton was bad or mediocre at best. I bring that up, obviously, to bring up LSU. The Tigers are 1-2 with losses to Mississippi State and Missouri this past weekend. And people are starting to wonder if Ed Orgeron at LSU is Gene Chizik 2.0 with Joe Burrow and Joe Brady serving as his Cam Newton. What do you make of that idea that maybe Orgeron just had an all-time great quarterback and an all-time great passing scheme, and once he lost those guys, he gets back to being the guy people used to make fun of?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think Ed's overall, even though obviously the Ole Miss years were bad, he'd accomplished a little bit more.
Sure.
than even Chizik had. But I think those comparisons are fair at this point, and it's going to be something that's brought up until they have another great season at LSU, and this is not obviously going to be that great season. So I think we're going to find out just how much Ed Orgeron has evolved as a coach. We heard a lot about that. We read a lot about that during last season. But now, you know, he really faces a bit of a crisis, not even a bit, a real crisis so early this year. He talked today about how they may have to run one defense this week because just to keep it simple enough for the players to execute. You mentioned Joe Burrow and Joe Brady, who had a huge roles in the national title, but Dave Aranda did too. Dave Aranda was the highest paid coordinator in college football for a reason. And even though him and Ed Orgeron are pretty different personality-wise and philosophy-wise on defense, it worked last year. And now Aranda's gone and Bo Pelini's in, and it's just not working well at all. So I think, you know, whether I don't know how much gets fixed this season, but they're going to have to stabilize somehow and then make some big decisions going forward, because this is a problem. And I know that Ed will recruit. He always recruits. But if they're not a more cohesive team and they're not a team that they can get through games without major mistakes here and there and not being able to punch it in with four chances against Missouri to win the game. And there's just all sorts of issues at LSU, and he has a lot to clean up for sure in the short term and the long term.
I won't pretend to know how Sam Pittman's career is going to unfold at Arkansas, but one thing I think we can all agree on is in year one, the wins are going to be hard to come by, even if he's already got one. And he seemed very close to getting another on Saturday, and then the refs step up and just mess up that whole situation. How badly did the refs handle that situation that I think you can reasonably say cost Arkansas another victory?
Yeah, it wasn't a good call, but you know, it was a weird situation. I mean, you just don't, as an official, you can't anticipate seeing what we saw with the quarterback fumbling a snap, and then, you know, obviously spiking it backwards. Right. And then, you know, you heard the whistle. It seemed like there was one chance for Arkansas to sort of recover it cleanly, and then they started blowing the whistles. And at that point, you have to rule it the way that they did. But it was unfortunate, for sure, because Arkansas in many ways deserved that game, the way that they played, coming back from 17-0 down. I mean, the bottom line is Arkansas is playing hard for Sam Pittman and his staff. Barry Odom, I wrote a piece today where I highlighted both Pittman and Odom as coaches that have really made an impression early this season. He's done a great job, the former Missouri head coach, with a defense that was horrific last year under Chad Morris. That defense is now playing at a much, much higher level, even though they don't have a great deal of talent. So I'm excited to see what Arkansas can do here going forward. Now they've got a little bit of confidence. They certainly are believing in their coaching staff. Can they go out and win some more games and really set themselves up well for the future? You know, I wasn't crazy about this hire, Gary. You hired a guy that nobody else was hiring or had on their radar to be a head coach, but it's working so far in Fayetteville, and that's an encouraging sign in year one.
No, I'm with you. I thought it was a silly hire for the exact same reasons. And like you said, it seems to be working so far. Arkansas has been respectable on the football field, and that's something that we haven't been able to say for a little while. Meantime, I think heading into the weekend, everybody was wondering, like, what is Tennessee exactly? They'd won 8 straight games, and given what Tennessee has gone through, like, that's not nothing. That should be celebrated. But they had not beaten a quality opponent or a ranked opponent, and obviously the competition was going to increase drastically when they go to Georgia. Then they're up 21-17 at the half. I'm starting to believe, then they lose 44-21. Where are we at on Tennessee right now?
Right, yeah. I mean, I think it's still headed in the right direction, but clearly not at the same level as Georgia. You know, there were two games this past weekend. I think Miami-Clemson was the other, where you just saw that there's still a gap, that the one program is getting better, but it's still nowhere near where the other program is when you play a four-quarter game. And yeah, you know, just listening to Kirby Smart in his halftime interview, he didn't sound overly concerned, even though that Georgia had missed some opportunities, especially on fourth down. I think he knew he had the better team. But I'll say this for Tennessee, they're improved up the line of scrimmage, and I think over time they're going to get better at quarterback. You know, Guarantano has seemingly been there a long time. I know Jeremy Pruitt's still confident in him, but they'll ultimately need to get better at quarterback to win an SEC championship. And so, you know, I'm not completely down on Tennessee. I think they can, you know, still win some games. It'll be interesting to see how they perform against Alabama, and certainly A&M, I think, comes into Knoxville as well. so they have some big opportunities at home against some really talented teams to notch a signature win. So I think it's still, you know, not all is lost for them, but they're clearly not ready to compete for an SEC championship.
Wrapping up here with Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. Last thing before I let you go, Texas is now 2-2 in year four under Tom Herman. He's only finished in the top 20 once in the previous 3 years. Doesn't look like he's going to do it this year. Are people starting to question whether he's the right guy in Austin? And how much worse does it make it that Mac Brown is 3-0 and ranked fifth in the AP poll at UNC?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if people want Mac Brown back,
right.
But I think they're definitely questioning what Tom is doing at this point. He has recruited well, just as Mac recruited well. But at the end of Mac's time, they did not translate those recruiting classes into great success. And that's sort of the same thing that's going on now. You know, in talking to coaches in the Big 12 and talking to analysts, they see the talent at Texas, but it feels as though it's maxed out. Like, they're not getting better year to year. And the real shame of it, Gary, is that they have this quarterback who will go down as one of the greats from a numbers standpoint in Texas history, and it feels like he's doing it all on his own. You know, I tweeted after they lost to LSU last year, it would be a real shame if Texas doesn't win something substantial with Sam Ellinger at quarterback before he moves on. And all these Texas fans jumped on me at the time, but I'll stand by that. You know, they're not going to win anything substantial while Sam Ellinger is there, other than the Sugar Bowl a couple of years ago. They're not going to win a Big 12 championship unless something goes crazy here. And he's really a special player. So I think you have to look at the coaching and the development at other positions and why they continue to make mistakes and not get better in the run game, not get better on defense, avoid some of those disciplinary issues, penalties at the worst possible times. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely in turning into a hot seat situation unless they can go on a run here later in Big 12 play.
That is Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. Make sure you're reading him, ESPN.com. Follow him on Twitter, at ESPN Rittenberg. Really appreciate your time, buddy. Take care of yourself, all right?
You too. Thanks, Gary.
All right. That's Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. And the Texas situation is interesting because they might have done this in football and men's basketball. This being what I'm about to explain. They've got these coaches who had been there for a while, getting older, and had done really big things there. And they push them both out.
Mm-hmm.
Mac Brown in football, Rick Barnes in basketball. And then they hire the young, hot things. Tom Herman in football, Shaka Smart in basketball. And though I'm still a believer in Shaka, like, he's got a preseason top 20 team enrolled right now, the truth is Texas is in this weird spot where the guys they ran out went and got lesser jobs and are doing those jobs better than their replacements are doing at Texas.
No question.
Mac Brown is doing better at North Carolina than Tom Herman is doing at Texas. And as much as I like Shaka, this is just true, Rick Barnes has done better at Tennessee than Shaka Smart has done at Texas. It doesn't mean that Mac shouldn't have been pushed or Rick shouldn't have been pushed. I don't think. Perhaps it does. I don't think so. I'm not going to have revisionist history here. There was really nobody arguing against those changes when they happened. You know, Texas basketball had plateaued a little bit, and Texas football clearly wasn't where it was supposed to be. Rick wasn't recruiting at a high level at Texas anymore. I can't speak to the specifics of Texas football recruiting at the end under Mac Brown, but it is interesting that Texas football is very mediocre. Mac Brown's got a top five team at North Carolina. Texas basketball has been a bit of a disappointment, and Rick Barnes has got a preseason top 15 team at Tennessee after in recent years having a number one ranked team, SEC champion, so on and so forth. When we come back, awful ankle injury for Mississippi State alum Dak Prescott yesterday in Dallas's game against the New York Giants. If you saw it, you knew pretty quickly, and perhaps quicker than Tony Romo recognized it, that Dak was seriously injured. And now people are already starting to speculate about what it means for his future in Dallas. I'll tell you what I bet it means. Next, you listen to Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM. Jeff Calkins.
Like, what?
I was going to say you got Jeff Calkins to be here at 5 o'clock. You're listening to me. I'm still Gary Parrish, far as I know. 92.9 FM ESPN.
What's hot for business this week at Staples?
Small prices, big savings.
Get ready to go big this holiday season with everything your business needs at amazing prices.
From shipping supplies and services to custom signs and PPE supplies.
And right now at Staples, save up to 30% on all shipping supplies with 12-pack mailers as low as $7.
Shop in-store or pick up curbside.
Save big for your business this week at Staples.
Ends 12/26 while supplies last, in-store only. Curbside available in most stores.
I feel like I'm being haunted by a pair of headphones. Everywhere I go is a creepy ad for headphones I looked at one time. I hate feeling like I'm being watched. I downloaded DuckDuckGo and saw a difference right away. Take back your privacy with DuckDuckGo.
The fall weather has hit. Football season is here. And this is Gary Parrish reminding you that James Davis is helping celebrate with 20% off all fall merchandise until the end of October. Sports shirts, sweaters, active tops that are perfect for those cool nights while eating outside. It's all available at James Davis, as our new five-pocket brush cotton pants and tons of new denim. And don't forget about the Stant custom shirt and custom pants system. All it takes is three measurements and roughly a minute of your time, and you'll have custom-made shirts and pants ordered for you. They'll be ready before you know it. They'll fit you perfectly, just like mine fit me perfectly. And right now, you can get it done with 20% off the regular price. That's a deal that should not be passed up. And if you need a new suit, the greatest deal available is at James Davis. You can get two Paul Bettinelli suits for just $7.95. I own like six of them. You can get two right now for just $7.95. They're incredible deals through October 31st, only at James Davis in the Laurelwood Shopping Center, on the web, jamesdavisstore.com.
Love getting prices that are lower than low on food that's fresher than fresh? Then shop at Kroger. We give you more ways to save on the fresh you love with tools like the Kroger app, where you can find personalized coupons on top of weekly sales, giving you prices that are lower than the everyday low. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Be sure to pick up Honeycrisp or Sweet Tango apples. They're a ripe, juicy fall favorite and just $1.77 a pound with card. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
College football, it's the game you wake up early on Saturdays for. Even though kickoff isn't until 7, the game where the Goodyear blimp becomes a Hall of Famer. The game that goes just beyond school, spirit, fandom, or love of the sport. It's the game where the comebacks happen. It's the game where anything can and will happen, as long as you have the drive. Because college football is the game that moves you. We get it because it moves us too. Goodyear, more driven.
Listening to this Allstate commercial about savings might be the hardest thing about getting those savings. Save for simply becoming an Allstate customer. Save more for adding DriveWise. And save even more for driving safely. Visit Allstate.com or contact your local agent for a quote today. Allstate. Minimum effort, maximum reward.
Not available in every state. New customer savings based on early signing discount. Drive-wise is an optional feature. Savings vary based on how you buy. Subject to terms and conditions. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Northbrook, Illinois.
It's time to play Jackpot Justice. That's right. If you can't make it to the casino, we have Jackpot Justice election style. Percy Lynchard wants to be on the Mississippi Supreme Court. He has a long history of getting big bucks from his Jackpot Justice cronies. $40,000 from Mississippi trial lawyers. $20,000 from Democratic mega donors. Lynchard would risk bringing Jackpot Justice back to Mississippi. Fortunately, we have a conservative alternative, Mississippi Supreme Court Justice Josiah Coleman. He's a conservative and experienced judge, a fair-minded man who understands hard work. Coleman lives on a farm, has served as a volunteer firefighter, and bagged groceries and washed dishes to help pay for his education. When it comes to the Mississippi Supreme Court, reject Jackpot Justice. Vote conservative, vote Coleman. Justice Josiah Coleman for the Mississippi Supreme Court. Paid for by Improved Mississippi PAC. Derek Easley, Treasurer. Not approved by any candidate.
Hey, it's Brad Carson for my friends at Old Dominic, a proud hometown partner of our Memphis Tigers, located in the heart of downtown Memphis with a 150-year-old story that's been revived and ready to be shared. And you can get all the info at olddominic.com on the one-of-a-kind spirits made right here in the Bluff City. Ask your favorite spirit shop where you can find Old Dominic products, enjoy them during the game. And you can also follow Old Dominic Distillery on Facebook and Instagram for more news and info, like the brand new new Hewling Station whiskey there. It hits the shelves just in time for football season and cooler weather. These small batch whiskeys are perfect for the seasoned whiskey drinker. Whiskey newcomers will love them too. You can enjoy them neat over ice or in an old-fashioned whiskey cocktail. Set the bar with Hewling Station from Old Dominic this football season. Plus, try Old Dominic's Memphis Vodka, the Formula Number 10 gin, and their Memphis Toddy, which is perfect for football weather. Just like the Tigers, Old Dominic spirits are 100% pure Memphis. That's Old Dominic Distillery and Old Dominic Spirits, 100% pure Memphis. Share a sip from your hometown brand this football season, and go Tigers go. Old Dominic encourages all fans to share a sip responsibly.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
The God Killer, this Tokyo and I'm Godzilla. Playing blackjack versus death gun on the card dealer. Just bought a demon, I'm screaming about the card dealer. Last temptation of Mike, but I'm a God tigger. Tell me as a Bob that the God don't need a job. And if I did, the oligarchs would be missing, murdered, and wrong. This is Bonaparte, and he paid with Tucson. And they went on a world conquest, tearing your Bonaparte.
Jeff Calkins is an award-winning columnist from the Daily Memphian. He's going to join me in the next segment. But right now, I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
Just an absolute horrific injury for Dak Prescott yesterday in the Giants and Cowboys game. That Andy Dalton came in and helped secure a win. So if you're a Cowboys fan, that's the good news. The bad news is your franchise quarterback and the face of your franchise, his foot almost came off of his leg. Did you see this injury?
I did see the injury, yes.
Holy crap. I won't pretend that I spotted it immediately the way you spot it immediately after watching it a second time or a third time or a fourth time, but Tony Romo did have a moment where when it happened live, he said, oh, you just got to hope it's a cramp. And I was like, no, it's not a cramp. His foot is barely connected to his leg, it looks like. His foot's pointing the wrong direction.
It was,
like,
yes.
Your foot's not supposed to point the way Dak's foot. And Tony recognized it when they zoomed in on it a little bit. It was just one of those things when you're talking live on television, you know, sometimes you'll say things you wish you could take back. And I do probably think that he was being hopeful. Like, that is what he said. You've got to hope it's a cramp. Because Dak was holding down where guys might hold when they do cramp up. Mm-hmm. And so maybe he was just trying to put a positive spin on it, like, oh, my God, I hope this isn't as bad as it might be. You got to hope it's a cramp. Either way, we now know it was not a cramp. It was a serious ankle injury, one in which his bone was apparently coming through his leg. It was really, really bad.
Oof.
And so they haven't, you know, I was reading a lot about this earlier today, and it's like, you know, they said that his return is uncertain. I'm like, what? How is his return uncertain? Like, he's not playing football again this season.
No.
Yeah, like, what are we talking about? But he's out for the season. Like, yes. That seems pretty clear. And so the question becomes, like, what do you do now? Because I think famously, if you follow this stuff even a little bit, you know, Dak and Dallas have not been able to agree on a long-term contract. They've had one on the table. He has refused to sign it. The sticking point seems to be, they were pretty close on money, but he wanted 4 years and they wanted five. And the reason behind wanting fewer years is because you don't want to be locked into a contract signed in 2020 when the television money goes up for the NFL and suddenly you're underpaid, at least in theory. So they never could get a deal done. Dallas just franchised. And so what some have suggested since that happened yesterday is that this is why he should have signed the long-term deal. But the truth is, he's making $31 million right now, and will still make that even though he's not going to play again this season. It's guaranteed money. And if they franchise him again next year, which is what everybody seems to think they'll do, because now's not the time to sign him to a long-term deal. What if he's never the same?
Right.
You just don't know. I mean, there's no reason to think he won't be the same, but you don't know if he's going to be the same. So why would you want to lock him up to a long-term deal now, even at 4 years? Like, I don't know if I want to lock up Dak. For the type of deal he would sign, I don't know if I want to do that with a guy's foot that was hanging off his leg yesterday.
Right.
So the alternative to that would be let him go. You don't want to let him go. He's your franchise quarterback. So the third option is the most likely option, which is they just franchise him again. And that's like close to $38 million guaranteed for the 2021 season. My point being, he's going to make like $69 million over the next, over this year and next year.
Right.
By not signing a long-term deal. So, like, would he have made more money than that on this two-year span if he'd have signed a long-term deal? We don't know, but even if he would have, it wouldn't have been much more. So I don't think this is financially devastating. He's going to put $31 million in the checking account, savings account, wherever he puts it, this season. And barring a surprise, another $38 million next season, even coming off of injury. And then we'll see, you know, what he is. If he is the Dak Prescott that was throwing for 400 yards every week, perhaps then he does get the long-term deal he desires. If he's not, maybe it is time for Dallas to move on. But either way, just a depressing turn of events, because even if you don't like the Cowboys, I think you've got to respect Dak Prescott.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, who doesn't like Dak Prescott?
I think that's true.
You know, he's a SEC star despite not being recruited that way. You know, becomes a starter of the most prominent NFL franchise in this country, despite not being drafted that way, and seems to, for the most part, I think, handle himself professionally off the field. He obviously endured family tragedy and has opened up about that in a way that I believe is helpful to other people dealing with mental illness and family tragedies. And so I got nothing but respect for that guy. And to watch him, you know, have to be carted off the field in tears after his foot nearly falls off was just a rough thing to see. So hopefully he gets better, comes back, and continues to be a high-level starter in that league for a long, long time.
Story number two.
Major League Baseball playoffs continue to unfold. We get Game 1 Braves-Dodgers tonight. I can't wait for that. Max Fried against Walker Buehler. It's a 7:08 first pitch. You'll be able to watch it on Fox. Dodgers are minus 135. Total is 8. We can get into that more during Dinner to Go. ALCS is already going to be 2 games in by the time the NLCS gets started, because Rays Astros started last night and they're in game 2 right now. And both games unfolding in similar ways. It's sort of a cliche with baseball, but it doesn't make it any less true. It's a game of inches. Walks and errors kill you. Last night, the Rays lost game 1. I mean, the Astros lost game 1. Because what? In the 5th inning, they walked a leadoff man. Well, maybe they lost because they couldn't score. Like, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But walk a leadoff man in the 5th inning. He gets across the plate. You're down 2-1. You never make it up. Today, first inning, error. Throwing error by, I believe, Jose Altuve. Next hitter, 3-run homer. They're down 3-0. The Astros are right now. They're in the bottom of the 5th. So they could be, the Astros down 2-0. By the time the NLCS gets started, and you could chalk both losses up to, if you don't walk the leadoff man in game 1 in the 5th inning and you don't have an error, throwing error in the first inning of game 2, maybe the entire series goes down differently. To be clear, the Rays are the better team and have been the better team all season. It's why they're favored to win the series, but it really might come down to walks and errors. At least so far, these two games have been determined, or it seems set to be determined, by a walk and by an error.
Story number 3.
Titans had to shut down their facility again yesterday,
they
Bennett.
They did, yeah. But it appears everything's going to be fine.
COVID Titans can't stay clean.
I think it's actually, just from seeing the news over the past couple of days, I think this might just be like a Nashville problem.
Well, Vanderbilt's now had to cancel a game.
Vanderbilt's had to cancel. There was some like massive religious concert. Those videos?
Yes. What were
Good
they doing?
Lord.
They were like on the steps of the courthouse or something?
Man. That was like thousands of people.
No, it looked like Music Fest.
Yeah.
Except it wasn't. It was like some weird thing in the middle of a pandemic. It's like, what are we doing?
I don't know. Like, I don't know.
And then you get Dan Mullen. You hear Dan Mullen, this
what
guy?
What did Dan say?
Oh, he was so pissed off when they lose at A&M over, on Saturday. Because, like, Texas A&M was supposed to be at 25% capacity. It looked like they had 70,000 people
there. Oh, for sure. Yes,
it looked like there was just too many people there. And so Dan Mullen's like, our governor has said we can have capacity in Florida, so I want 90,000 people in the swamp. It's like, come on, man. Dr. Fauci's going to punch you right in your throat if he ever hears you say that again. You're talking about you want 90,000 people in the swamp. On the SEC teleconference today, he was asked about it again, like, Coach Mullen, have you had time to reflect on what you said on Saturday? Like, do you really think it's a good idea to have 90,000 people in the swamp in the middle of a pandemic? He was like, I'm just focusing on LSU. He just, tried to deflect it like he wouldn't go there. But, like, and this is what I get into these conversations because my wife's store still has a mask mandate, and most stores in DeSoto County do not, and she still has one. And the argument for the people who don't have one is like, well, you know, if our government officials say it's okay, it's okay. And I'm like, no. If your government officials are too stupid to recognize that it's not okay, that doesn't make it okay. It just means that you've got stupid government officials who don't listen to doctors or believe in science. And too often in the South, those are the people we elect. Dan Mullen, same thing. Well, you know, our governor says, well, your governor's an idiot who doesn't believe in science and has never taken this virus seriously. So just because your governor says you can have 90,000 people in the swamp doesn't mean that it's smart to have 90,000 people in the swamp. Go find me one health official who thinks it's smart to have 90,000 people in a football stadium in the state of Florida right now. So hopefully Scott Strickland, who I do know to be a smart man, somebody I've known for a long, long time, hopefully he will make the right decision, or the SEC will help him make the right decision. I don't know what the actual capacity should be in that football stadium on Saturday, but I do know packing 90,000 people in there cannot possibly be a smart thing. Again, hopefully cooler heads prevail. Back to the Titans. Mm-hmm. Game still on for tomorrow
night.
It's
on.
Network of Stars, America's most watched network.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.